You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel. And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 250th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 842nd episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of May 12th, 2022. I am your host, Jared Morris. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Smart takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
Alrighty. Well, tonight's banner moment is going to be a little different than what we normally do, a little more difficult than what we normally do. But I want to share some sad news that hit our Assembly Call family recently. Those of you who are in the private community know this. Some of you may not, but Andy's dad, Larry Bottoms, died a few weeks ago at the age of 71. Needless to say, it has been a rough time for Andy and his family, and he's obviously taken some time last week, this week, to be with his family. He'll be back here on the show whenever he is ready, obviously taking as much time as he needs. And, you know, like so many of us, Andy became a lifelong IU fan because of time that he spent as a kid with his dad, with his parents, going to IU football and basketball games. Larry was born in Ohio. He lived most of his life in Ohio, including a stint as mayor of the town Orwell that he lived in. But he attended school at IU. He graduated in 1972, and his love for the Hoosiers endured for the rest of his life. So we dedicate this banner moment, we dedicate this episode of the Assembly Call to Larry Bottoms, to his wife Peggy, and to Andy, Jen, and their two daughters, Hannah and Mallory, which so many of you here on the show have heard about and know about. It's been a tough couple of weeks for the family, so please keep them in your thoughts and prayers. And I do know this, you know, when IU does hang its next banner, you better believe that we'll be thinking about Larry and how happy he'd be to see his Hoosiers winning it all again. Rest in peace, Larry. You raised a hell of a son, and we are proud to call him a friend. Okay, to my left this evening, he is a longtime high school basketball coach in the state of Indiana. He is the founder of Delphi Bracketology, and he is Fran McCaffrey's number one fan.
He remembers the days when a movie cost a dollar. Heaven help you if you ever decide to pop your collar. Play hard, but remember, fake hustle is a crime. He's the coach, and it's Tonsoni time.
Coach, it is Tonsoni time. What's on your mind?
Well, there are several things. First of all, to Andy and his family, you know, just our thoughts and prayers. And it's good to have a community. One of the blessings of the Assembly Call community is to help each other get through tough times. Usually that's just basketball, but a lot of times life throws you some curveballs, and it's just nice to be able to be there for Andy. We wish nothing but the best. Can't wait to get him back on the show. From an Indiana basketball perspective, just keep getting impressed or being impressed with what Coach Woodson's doing with his hires, the recruits moving up in the rankings. The 247 rankings is exciting. It just the direction of the program is on the uptick, and that's just so exciting. We have a lot of questions that are still out there about roster construction. Soon guys will be coming back to campus or coming to campus for the first time to start their workout. So even though we're a long way away from November, there's a lot to talk about and a lot of good things happening for Indiana basketball.
Absolutely. All right, and to my right, he is a senior writer for The Big Lead, and he remains the self-appointed shot doctor in waiting for Indiana basketball. Even though they just hired Jordan Hulls, he's still maintaining that he is next in line to be the shot doctor.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
The dude just interrupted his own jingle.
Ryan, do you have a rant or a rumination for us this week? this is so great. Ryan muted. He's just talking. We can see the words.
Sorry. Hey, it's been 2 weeks since we've done a show, guys. We're all a little rusty.
You don't need to apologize. I think everyone was enjoying it.
Apologies for the video quality for those watching. I'm in my parents' guest room for hopefully just another week.
I was going to say, usually the camera puts on 20 pounds. It appears that it's taken off like 50.
That's actually real, though. It's in fact, it's probably added on an extra 10, but I'm still at like 40 lost. So we're good. Yeah, I think that you touched on it. The Jordan Hulls news is great for everybody. I think that we've talked about it for years on here, and I think I've dropped it a number of times. Jordan Hulls eventually get a coach at Indiana, right? Like, you know, as an assistant or something. I mean, it's just the marriage is perfect given who he was, the kind of cerebral player he was, the coaching lineage of his family, the way he grew up, everything about Bloomington, his family, all that. It's great news for the Hoosier basketball. I will say, though, as a shot doctor, I don't think Jordan should be teaching people his motion. It worked for Jordan, but you would never teach somebody to shoot that way.
He can teach it to go in.
That's true. Yeah. Now that part I agree with, coach. You teach the release point and on from there.
Confidence.
Nothing before that. Yeah, nothing before that. And of course confidence. So no, I think that's just a great move. It's a good Hoosier story right now to have him back. I mean, the guy was still actually being pretty successful in Europe. So it's interesting that he just decided, hey, it's time to hang it up. I know there's probably family issues there, you know, just wanting to be back home. And he gets to raise his kids in Bloomington for now, at least. And it's really, really a nice story.
Rick Bozich had a really good piece on it. I mean, I don't think he was thinking about hanging it up, but he said when this opportunity came up, it was reason enough to do it. I mean, he said there wasn't much that could get him to retire early, but this was an opportunity he couldn't pass up. So happy to have him. And we'll obviously be talking about that more as we go through tonight's show. Here's what we have on tap. Segment one, we're going to kind of go rapid fire through a bunch of Hoosier headlines. You know, we haven't been here in 3 weeks, however long it's been. So a lot has happened. We're going to get caught up on all those important stories. Then in segment two, we're going to linger on a couple of the most important headlines from the last couple of weeks, namely Jordan Hulls being hired, Trace Jackson Davis going to the combine. What does that mean for the near future, for the long-term future for Indiana basketball? And then in segment three, we've got a ton of questions that you all submitted, and so we will get to those, all of that coming this week on Assembly Call Radio. But first, let us talk about our presenting sponsor.
Home Field Apparel.
This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you will find anywhere. Beloved logos, like two different versions of the Bison and so many others. And they just did a refresh. So they've got three new designs there, a new hoodie that looks incredible. I mean, it's home field, so they don't miss. And they continue to release new schools. They've got new announcements all the time. You got to make sure you're following them on social media at Home Field Apparel. And really, you almost have to check like once a week, once every couple of weeks, because they have new stuff coming all the time. And it's not just for Indiana. It's not just for schools in Indiana. They've got 130, 140 different schools with unique vintage logos for all of them. So if you're looking for gifts, Home Field is the place to go. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable. The colors are going to last through many washings. And you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. And that is what it's all about. So go to homefieldapparel.com, use our promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, to get 15% off your first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Again, the website, homefieldapparel.com, wear one for the team. All right, well, let's go through some headlines, guys. First headline, Jeremy Gray announced as the permanent public address announcer at Simon Scott Assembly Hall, replacing the legend Chuck Crabb. I think I speak for all of us when I say an excellent choice. We fully support it. Jeremy Gray has obviously meant a ton to Indiana sports, and he did a great job.
Friend of the program.
Friend of the program, did a great job with the time that he had. You know, it would have been interesting to see maybe a mic off between Jeremy Gray and Galen Clavio, the other voice of Indiana sports. But given Jeremy's seniority and the work that he put in doing it, I don't think they could have gone with a better choice. So
he was great in relief this year. Let's be real. He was excellent in relief and very excited for Jeremy. And he's always been great to us. And it's a good dude. So feel happy.
Saw him at
easy to feel happy for good people.
Yeah, yes. Saw him at Victory Field when IU played their annual game there. Got it going again, and he sat down across the aisle, and our whole group asked him to say sophomore, and he turns around and he says it right there in at Victory Field. And I said, you know what, Jeremy, we need a drop on the assembly call.
We do.
We need this to be able to hit that. You know? And he said, get a hold of him. So yeah, and he's a friend of the program. So we have to have Jeremy on and or at least get a drop for the sophomore.
We do.
I couldn't okay. I couldn't remember if he was at this meetup or the last one, but I think
he
was. It was this
yeah, year. he comes all the time.
Yeah,
man, if it has to do with Indiana sports, he's supporting it, and that's what makes him great. So congratulations to Jeremy. Very good choice by Indiana. Next headline. Dexter Dennis announced his final six. He's set to announce, I believe, tomorrow where he is going to go. And from everything I have seen, he is not coming to Indiana. I think I saw Jeff Rabjohns report that. It may have been reported elsewhere. So this doesn't seem like one that Indiana fans need to pay any attention to. Is that what you guys are seeing as well?
Yeah, I think three weeks ago, I think that everybody was really hot to connecting him to IU. But I also think that now the feeling has certainly shifted. And I think that he wasn't a big need for Indiana. I just didn't feel that way. You know, if the defense had been horrible, maybe you say we need a guard who can get into people on the perimeter. And you know, he's a great defender. Don't get me wrong. You'd love to have a great defender like that. But that's not where Indiana's needs lie. Indiana could use another shooter if you're going to go get somebody. And so, and he's not that. So I think that it was the kind of thing where maybe they were hot on him in the beginning and it just kind of, and maybe he was hot on Indiana and his interest faded too, but I think that cooler heads have prevailed here and think that it's just not a match for either side of this equation.
Recruiting it fluctuates too, because Renaud came in and that changes the dynamics of your depth a little bit. And maybe, you know, Geronimo wants to play a little more on the perimeter. So you have those kinds of things, but we've talked a lot about, you got to play your athletes. You got to play your young guys and live through some of that, their difficulties early. If he comes, he's going to play an awful lot. And that might get in the way of some serious on-court minutes for some of the guys, you know, that we want to see get minutes. And obviously those young guys have to earn it. So we would have taken him because he's a high quality player, a defender, but he says, no, that's not even a blip in what the goals for Indiana should be next year.
I think you very easily could argue, you know, how he would benefit Indiana, and you very easily could argue how Indiana will be fine without him. And what that means is he wasn't really a guy who was going to move the needle. And, you know, so I think, yeah, you don't have this all-conference defensive player, but, you know, he was going to take minutes from a Trey Galloway and from guys like that. And so let's see how those guys develop. And we have a question that like kind of deals with that later.
You did kind of, it did kind of have the feeling that if he was added, you know, somebody else was going. And it could be somebody that was maybe more useful to Indiana that would be leaving if he came.
Yeah.
I don't have any specifics on that, but it's just the general feeling I get related to that. And plus,
and if not now, maybe later on too. Yes. You know, you lose a guy because of that. And he was a 1-year guy because he's a grad transfer.
And look, if Trace comes back, we don't have room. And I'm on record as saying, even though I think Dennis was an interesting fit, if you really wanted to double down on your defense and create maybe a top 5 defense in the nation, he was an interesting add for that point. But if it would mean that you had to get rid of somebody that has kind of grown and kind of built this chemistry that Indiana has, I wouldn't have wanted that. So anyway, we don't need to waste any more time on it because he's not coming.
Well,
and we can
One last thing about that, Jared, is if you get a guy like that, you're probably promising he's going to start, which means that you have to take Jalen Huchefino or Tamar Bates out of the starting lineup. You know,
he's not that he's not that level of player.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, the final 24/7 sports recruiting rankings are out. All 4 of Indiana's incoming freshmen get the 4-star label. So a little disappointing, I guess, from the Jalen Huchefino, Malik Renaud standpoint, because they were kind of borderline 4 or 5-star guys. But CJ Gunn jumps up from a 3 to a 4. You had Jalen Huchefino at number 23, Malik Renaud at number 34, Caleb Banks number 77, and CJ Gunn number 107. What I thought was especially interesting was they do a superlatives article. This is Kevin Flaherty from 24/7 Sports. They've got a whole bunch of different categories, you know, best player, best shooter, best shot blocker, like all these different things. And two of Indiana's recruits found themselves in there. And I think the categories that they were named in are really interesting. So for the Swiss Army knife, Flaherty named Jalen Hood-Schifino because he can do so many things offensively. He can do so many things defensively. He's really going to be able to fit in, whether you need him as a backup point guard, running your team, playing off ball, doing a lot of different things. He can do it. And then I think the one that should get a lot of Indiana fans excited is in the category multi-year star, it was Malik Renaud. Because of everything he brings to the table, but it not necessarily projecting right away to the NBA because he doesn't have above the rim athleticism, but he's got great footwork. He's a good defensive player, high IQ, all of those things where he really projects as a 3-4 year player that maybe other recruits are ranked above him talent wise, but in terms of total production as a collegiate, you know, he may surpass those guys because he's around longer. And that's how you build really good college programs.
Yeah, Jared, I think there's a difference between upside and value to a college program.
Yeah.
And getting a guy who's going to be around 2-3 years, while he may not be Anthony Davis, 5-star, amazing. I always use Anthony Davis as the example because he's the guy who was the all-everything guy who came in and won a national title and then left. I mean, you could do that about Carmelo too, someone like that. You get a huge value there in winning a national championship. You can't replace that. But you get guys who don't, if you don't win a title with some of those guys and they leave after 1 year, you'd much rather have the guy that's around 2-3 years and providing long-term value to you. And so some of these recruits are maybe not the 5-star guy, but have more value to you than a 5-star would over the course, value to your program, maybe not to the next year's team, but to the program. And it's all about building that sustainable program. And I'll say this about Hood-Schifino being the Swiss Army knife, because you brought that up. He can play all three positions on the perimeter, likely, with his 6'5", you know, probably be about 215 by the time he plays next year frame. He can play all three positions. He can probably defend all three positions on the perimeter. Renaud, again, you know, I think there's upside here as a college player. Maybe not the NBA, you know, as they mentioned, but that guy, if he could shoot, he could be an NBA player. If he can develop a jumper, he could be an NBA player. But there is so much. And I think Hood-Schifino's sort of in the same boat, is that he's not going to be a one and done. I mean, unless something crazy happens, and it's probably really good news for Indiana, he's not a one and done. And so you get both of those guys for multiple years, you're recruiting value. Guy like Caleb Banks, who's on the way up. I mean, he's gotten better and better and better over the last 18 months. Another value pickup. CJ Gunn, a guy who's improved tremendously over the last 2 years since he committed. Another value pickup. So you're adding value, maybe not as much professional upside, maybe not as much 1 year upside, but it's about building, you know, and we talked about this with Malik Renaud. Your job as a college coach is to win college basketball games. You'd like to prepare you guys for the next level. It makes your program more attractive. But if you're just a development machine, there's no upside for the fans or for the program. You need to do both because it looks good when you have players in the NBA, but your job is to win college basketball games. And if you bring in value that's going to be there for a while, you extend the likelihood that you're going to win college basketball games. And that's, you know, what I feel like Mike Woodson's recruiting strategy has been. Maybe get these guys to the NBA and develop them and make them better. You got to win first and foremost before you can worry about that.
Oh, the Kentucky fans in the audience nodding furiously as Ryan makes that point. Coach,
absolutely.
Your thoughts?
I mean, you look at that example. That's what it is.
Your thoughts on the incoming class?
Want to just, you know, look at the back end, the jump that CJ Gunn made after he overcame his injury. He just had a phenomenal year, senior year in high school, some high scoring, you know, games. That I don't know how that translates right away, and I doubt that it does right away in major minutes, but there's a guy that can develop, and you never know when they start that development, but it meets Coach Woodson's strategy of getting guys that can shoot, score, drive, multi-dimensional players into the program. And the other thing we've always said for a long time, you want to win in college basketball, you got to get old, stay old, and then sprinkle it in with talent. You're building that depth that you'll have guys there for 3 or 4 years that can play the game, and then you sprinkle them in with 1 or 2 year players and complement each other. And I think Coach Woodson's well on his way. But, you know, Tyler makes a good point in the chat. No one's really talking about Banks now that we got the two guys from Mount Verde. But Banks is just unbelievable on film. And as every freshman, how does that translate to the college game? And every school loves their incoming recruits. But
it's he might be the best NBA prospect of the four, actually.
By the time everything plays out. But again, there's times to come in and make your move and pop for a game or two and develop as freshmen. And then, you know, those players are really going to be good as they develop sophomore, junior year. For Indiana. So this is an exciting class. And Coach Woodson, again, off the court and winning this year, he's just doing a lot of things really, really well. And I think this recruiting class is one of them.
You want my new player comp for CJ Gunn? So back
we're going to get it anyway,
You're going to get it whether you want it or not. Right. I was looking back, you know, he's ranked 107, and I was looking back at some of the players that have been ranked around there, like in the hundreds to 120. And man, you've had some good players in there from the Big Ten. I know we don't like them, but Brad Davidson, Xavier Tillman, Luca Garza, like on and on. There's a lot of players that have been really good 3-4 year Big Ten players that were ranked in there. But there was one guy not from a Big Ten school ranked in there that I thought really was a good comp, and that's Corey Kispert, who played at Gonzaga. Similar size, shooter, quickness, ranked kind of about the same way. Now, he didn't do much his first couple seasons, but then really exploded as a junior and a senior. And I think when you look at maybe the upside for what CJ Gunn could be, assuming his shot translates, you know, and he's able to defend at a decent level, I think that's a guy that that you could look at. Maybe he won't be, you know, quite at that level, but if he can get to 80-90% of that, that'd be a pretty good player for Indiana. So great class. I know we're all really excited about those guys. Next headline. How about the schedule that is shaping up for next year? We already knew about the Kansas game, which is going to be fantastic, but we found out that Indiana is going to play Arizona on December 10th in Las Vegas. The long-awaited Miller matchup, Miller Bowl, Miller Madness between Sean Miller and Archie Miller. Well, they're not here to coach in it, but the two schools will do it in Vegas. I don't know. We always plan our meetup for Bloomington, and maybe we'll do a meetup in Bloomington, but maybe we might have to make a little detour to Vegas and watch that game. Thoughts on Indiana facing Arizona? And look, I mean, we all know Indiana has to be in these games, right? And part of the reason for leaving the Crossroads Classic is so that you can get into a higher profile game. When the opportunity cost is playing Butler, that doesn't, you know, look to be very good this year, and now you can face Arizona and what will be a national TV game against a high-profile program, this is what Indiana needs to do. Smart scheduling and a great matchup for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, I think that you've seen the schedule come back to bite Indiana a few times in the past, and I think this is definitely a reaction to that, is by beefing it up. And if you are going to be relevant nationally, and that's where this program is hoping to go, you got to be part of that conversation. And you see Michigan State, North Carolina, Duke play these high profile, Kentucky play these high profile matchups in arenas, in, you know, sometimes in domes, like wherever they play them at, you know, neutral site venues, whatever, to pump it up. And Indiana's, if Indiana wants to be in the national conversation, it needs to start doing that. It's certainly better than playing Marshall. You know, I mean, what does that do for you at the end of the year? Even if you lose those games, you get tested, you play great teams, and then you enter the Big Ten, you know, armed and ready with a little bit. You know, there's not an adjustment period when you get into the Big Ten if you're playing these big teams.
Now, you learn sure, about your team. You know what you got.
And you know who will jump up, who will be able to handle that level of pressure in a way you don't get when you're playing a sub-300 level team that feels like a glorified practice.
Coach, your thoughts and the bracketology impact.
Yeah, it's just huge from a bracket because you're not losing anything regardless of the outcome. I mean, a loss at Kansas is not going to look bad on your resume. A mid-tier Big 12 or ACC like Syracuse loss didn't help Indiana. You're going to play some of those or be scheduled in some of the conference matchups. But by scheduling this purposely, you have a chance. You win one, that's staying with you from a bracketology standpoint. from a program standpoint, that's another reason you want to come to Indiana is to play in these big games. We used to have Kentucky on the schedule. Those things matter. And I don't know if they matter a whole lot in recruiting, but you've got to get on television and you've got to be in some of these marquee events to push yourself forward. You've seen years where maybe a Michigan State loses some of these games, but they still end up with a halfway decent seed in the tournament. It just is the right thing to do. And if you're going to get rid of the Crossroad Classics, which a lot of people like to attend and thought it was good, it just ran its course. Scheduling teams like this, and you still have the ACC Challenge, which I would imagine Indiana's going to get a top two or three matchup there. You've already got three high caliber games. And those are good to judge your team because the Big Ten's been brutal. And I think the Big Ten's going to be down a little bit, but it's still a brutal run through 20 games. These games will help prepare you for that without damaging the resume. So it's just a no-brainer. It's exciting. I'm trying to find some money to either go to, you know, Kansas or to Vegas and watch the Hoosiers. So it's
ladies
good.
And gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Tom Sony Unleashed in Vegas is a documentary waiting to happen. Just if anybody wants to shoot it out there, get in touch with us.
Oh, man. It'll be epic.
It would be epic. Yes, it would. Okay, we've still got a few more headlines. We're going to get through those. We're going to talk about some NIL stuff, and then we'll talk about Trace Jackson Davis getting invited to the Combine, what we think about his stay-or-go decision, and more on Jordan Hull's coming home. That is next on the Assembly Call. Stick with us.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hope he's okay. Did not look
hey, this
good.
This was really cool. For the people in the chat mob and watching, and Jared knows this, I had done a little bit of baseball podcasting back in 2018 when Coach Lemonis was in the last year. Never met Coach Lemonis, never interviewed him, nothing personally. But somehow he saw that I tweeted out that wheels were rolling, and he got a hold of me and asked for my cell number, and he took care of me, got me some good seats of the underground lodge where they have food and everything. And then Roger Rodaver, the director of basketball operations, gets a hold of me Friday night and offers a free tour of the Duty Noble Field, which is the most iconic college baseball field. And it just speaks volumes to what Indiana, they were only here for a short time coaching, but the connections matter. And I was a lucky recipient of their gracious hospitality to be able just to enjoy a couple games of SEC baseball and Mississippi State baseball from guys that I had never met before. But the Indiana connection was really cool. And that's, I think that speaks of Indiana athletics and there's a connection. And he actually waved me down Saturday night to come down to the field and talk to him on the front row and said he misses his time at Indiana and really enjoyed it. But he enjoyed Mississippi State winning the College World Series a little bit better. But I thought that was a pretty cool thing that a major coach like that didn't have to do for a guy like me. So,
man, that's pretty cool. Coach, think about that. If he treated you like that, right? He doesn't really have a personal connection with you, but he goes out of his way to make you feel special. Think about how he makes the people that work for him feel, his players, their families. Yeah. That's why that guy is successful. I mean, any more in coaching, it is so much more about the relationships because everybody's attention is bifurcated. But if you're going to be a coach, you've got to be able to have people's attention, get them to listen and care about your message. How do you do that? Have a relationship so they care about you. They know that you care. They'll stop and listen when you talk to them. I mean, that story right there. Yep. I mean, it speaks. I know it has nothing to do with baseball, but it speaks volumes about why he's successful and what he does.
Because they didn't really have to do that. Yeah. I'm driving down Highway 65, and all of a sudden, I see on my dashboard some odd number from Louisville, and I happen just to pick it up. Hey, Coach Lamona's here, Brian. How you doing? What? Why are you contacting me? I want to get you some tickets and some passes into the suite. So it was really cool. And I tell you what, those people love their baseball down there. The outfield is set up with all the patios and the grilling. And there, a couple of their fans reached out, so I got to go stand out there and help them cook a little bit. And it's a tremendous, tremendous atmosphere down there in the SEC land.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was a good time.
Okay, let's hop in to segment two. We'll talk. We'll start out talking NIL stuff. Here we go.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
Thank you, Jordan. Welcome back to The Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Coach Brian Tonsoni and Ryan Phillips, and we are continuing our run through all the headlines that have happened since our last show. There have been a lot of them. Guys, let's talk about NIL real quick. Obviously, there have been tons of headlines, you know, when it comes to NIL, from the crazy story with Nigel Pack, you know, getting $800,000 across 2 years, and, you know, the Ruiz or whatever the guy's name is, the booster at Miami, tweeting it out and, you know, really wanting it out there. And then the other Miami player basically saying, you know, well, hey, I need to get more. I mean, it's just, it really kind of created a firestorm and I think opened people's eyes to, okay, things are a little different now. This really is kind of the wild, wild west. And this week, the NCAA Board of Directors finally issued some name, image, likeness guidance. Now, there was guidance already. There were some rules in place, you know, that schools were supposed to follow. But no one was really clear on them. No one quite knew what enforcement was going to be like. And, you know, this new statement by the Board of Directors, you know, was kind of meant to kind of point to those. And it's like, hey, make sure you're following those. You know, the big thing is, you know, when it comes to recruiting, you know, boosters and NIL collectives are considered boosters, can't be involved in the recruiting process or providing benefits to prospective student athletes, because that's been a big question. You know, recruits are going to want to know what the NIL opportunities are and what are the rules there. You know, and I think Nick Saban was saying this is, you know, become a recruiting tool, and that's not what it was supposed to be. So it still kind of feels like we're in the gray a little bit on what's allowed and what's not, but the NCAA is trying to, you know, to make sense of it and give some guidance. But it does feel like it's lacking still. Brian, you wanted to, I know you had some thoughts on this and there were some comments happening in the chat. What are your thoughts on what's going on right now with NIL?
Yeah. So here's the thing. The NCAA abdicated all responsibility when this started. When the Alston case was decided by the Supreme Court, the NCAA basically just said, you said there were some guidelines already, Jared. That was the thinnest possible thing. The NCAA basically said, fine, do what you want.
At least said it wasn't supposed to be used as an enticement for recruiting. Like, I think that was in there as a guideline.
But they didn't really put a whole lot of rules together. They didn't really put rules together. They just kind of said, this is how we feel about this. The conferences and states will come up with the rules, is what they said. They abdicated responsibility and passed the buck to somebody else. And the reason why is because they were angry that they lost the case. And they just sort of said, screw it. You want free-for-all? Here's a free-for-all. They could have come out and said, okay, here's the thing. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do this. But players can go directly to advertisers and make money once they're at school. Like, they could have put some kind of guidelines in place. They could have put hard rules in place. And guess what? Courts wouldn't have been able to argue against that, because the kids still would have been able to own their own name, image, and likeness. It wasn't even about the kids making money off of it. It was the fact that they found that the NCAA has no right to own the player's name, image, and likeness. They have no right to it. And regardless of what they said, they have no right to it. So the fact that the NCAA just said, forget it, whatever, you want a free-for-all, here's a free-for-all. And I think it was a bit of a strategy. They wanted a free-for-all, and then they wanted everybody to complain about it. Well, here's the thing. All the NCAA has to do, name, image, likeness is never going away. It is here for good. And the reason why is because the Supreme Court said so. you know, courts have ruled repeatedly that the universities have no right to own that and make money off of somebody else's. You know, it's not like they're already making money off of their labor, you know, by playing in games and not giving kids a cut of the tickets or whatever. But they don't have a right to market those people and make money off of that. That's essentially what it is. And so the NCAA could have immediately come out with robust guidelines and said, yeah, we know this is going to happen. We don't want it to taint the product too much. Here's what we do. Instead, they didn't do that. And yeah, people are complaining about it because essentially what's happening is there are a lot of enticements to go to certain schools because there are no guardrails in place. They put some this week, but it's going to take a lot more than just saying, well, we're going to enforce this. You know, enforcement staff will investigate this or whatever, but it's still incredibly vague. I wrote about it this week. They're trying it, you know, and this is their, I think it's their ability to try and close Pandora's box that they opened by not putting rules in place. And so you've got conferences trying to do it. You've got the state of California has its own rules, whatever. If the NCAA just came out with guidelines, said, this is what's right. This is what's wrong. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. And we can argue those and maybe one of them is too harsh and we'll chop that one off and maybe modify it. That's all the NCAA had to do. But as has been its entire history, the NCAA did the wrong thing and it continues to do the wrong thing. And you can bet the screw up with NIL is one of the reasons Mark Emmert is leaving pretty soon. You think he wants to give up that cushy job where he does nothing and makes a lot? No, they know it's a joke and they look terrible. And all they had to do was do what they're supposed to do and be the governing body and issue some governance over this, and they opted not to. And so everything that they complain about, and they're you know, all of these people are upset about, that university presidents are at fault because they're dealing with the NCAA constantly. All they had to do was demand that, and they didn't. And so that we are where we are because the NCAA failed to lead yet again. I mean, nobody should be shocked by this.
And there is a confluence of factors that have made it a little bit crazier, as you know, our loyal listener Elbows In points out. The new transfer rules have kind of, you know, put this on steroids almost, you know, with all these high profile guys who can enter the transfer portal and are getting promised these enticements or looking for new NIL deals, and they're more established players. That combined with this is creating an even more crazy environment than what it would have been already if you just had the previous transfer rules and NIL come on. So It is truly a crazy time. And I get where, you know, where coaches are coming from. I mean, it has changed the nature of their jobs and I'm sure made being college basketball coach a lot less fun. They're making good money to do it. So I don't necessarily like, you know, I'm not weeping for them, but I do kind of empathize with the fact that, you know, it has made their job a lot more difficult to try and figure out rosters from year to year.
Well, it's not even that. It's that you don't know where it's going to go next. I think people saw collectives coming kind of, but didn't understand the impact they would have. They thought it would be like kid signs a deal with Nike, kid signs a deal with a local car dealership. Like, I think that's what most people thought it was going to be. And then you've got the collective starting, which I don't have a problem with the collectives. I think
that was inevitable. Anyone who didn't see that coming.
Of course. No, I know. But I'm saying like casual fans, like casual people thought, oh, it'll be nice. He can, you know, rep the local restaurant he eats at and get some cash, you know. But yeah, the collective started, and I think the goal of the collectives is fine. It is great and positive in a lot of ways. Some of them are far more disgusting than others, but I think that there was nothing saying that was illegal. There's nothing saying boosters can't get together and offer kids money to come to a certain school. I think the NCAA issued, you know, a directive saying you shouldn't do this, but they never put rules into place. And so what happened was all the boosters just got together and threw money at kids. And that was going to happen. You know, it was inevitable. You're right. Anybody who saw anything about this, okay, so they're basically going to get, it's like free agency in a professional sport. Not that I have a huge problem with that, but at the same time, I understand the frustration for coaches is that you could do a really great job recruiting a kid and he's going to go take a contract somewhere else solely because of the money. And that's his right. But it's also weird when you are in that situation, not knowing, well, can I offer him this? What can we do? It's just nobody knows what's next and nobody knows how to do it. And it's also very new. And I think that everybody will develop a strategy for it and figure it out as it goes. But yes, yeah, some of the things are it's pretty crazy. I understand the frustration of coaches. Now, the coaches who are saying we need to end this, it's wrong, they're wrong. Mm-hmm. But the coaches, I saw Lincoln Riley talk about it, basically saying we need to put some guidelines in place because we need to know what's legal and what's not. And we need to know not only what we can do, but what the people who are recruiting against us can do, you know, so we're all on the same footing. And I completely agree with that. And I've seen other coaches say that too. The key is the NCAA just has to make rules. That's all. And if the rules are bad, people will complain and they will change them. That's it. The same as any other NCAA enforcement.
Coach?
I just there's a couple things. One, I think the NCAA, I agree with Ryan, really showed a lack of progressive thinking on this and their stubbornness in we don't want it at all. And when we don't win, then we're just going to have our hands off was really a lack of leadership. In any business, any job, you have to look forward and try to, you know, beat the competition to a certain spot. If you just, you know, in essence, they put a line in the sand and said, we don't like this at all. And then they got beat and then they, you know, their hands are off. The other problem though is I'm all for trying to regulate that somewhat, but the NCAA has been horrible in enforcement in almost every rule that they have down. They have a book of rules on nutrition and what you can feed athletes and what you can buy athletes,
how often you can,
you can't take a kid off campus to the airport. But a guy can pay $800,000 for Nigel Pack and they're going to have their hands off. The NCAA is a mess and it's probably going to cause some issues with division of the NCAA Division I into different leagues in the future because of their total mismanagement of college athletics, in my opinion.
The NCAA is signing its own death warrant by not being more proactive.
And the rules had it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube with rules and stuff because it's just out there. From a coaching perspective, it is frustrating, but it's just hard for me to feel sorry for people making millions of dollars. This is your job now. Adjust to it. You know, there is a big adjustment when it used to be you had to go out and get tape back in my first early coaching days. Now it's all done computer. You just ask someone to send you a tape on computer and it's there, which made lazy coaches better coaches because they didn't have to really work at it. So you can sit and complain about stuff or you can go to work and win the NIL battle. Find a way to do it right or close to right and win your recruiting battles. This stuff of, oh, the other guy's got an advantage. Well, if he's got an advantage, turn that advantage against him and get the job done or get the hell out. You're getting paid millions of dollars. You know, I got paid $3,000 this year for 6 months of coaching. I can't feel sorry for these coaches. It's just part of it. And life's different. The dribble drive is a new type of offense.
If you just want pure basketball, there are other levels of basketball. But if you're going to be high D1 coach
said
now,
that?
This is part of it.
There was a tweet I saw or somewhere said, if you just want to educate guys and teach basketball, go down to Division II and Division III. Mm-hmm. This is just big boy league now. And I'm not sure I like the pay for play stuff that Miami's doing at all. But the NCAA made the mess. And NIL could have been, you come to a school, you're good. You get that car dealership to have you come sign for $2,000 autographs on a Saturday afternoon. That's what it was intended to do. But the NCAA just totally dropped the ball on this. And it's sad because the NCAA is going to just dissolve at some point because they've just been horrible. And, I mean, you know, and how they handle out discipline, how it's 3 years later and kids are on campus that weren't even part of the problem. Now they don't get to play. You take away scholarships, which hurt academics. But now with NIL, who needs it? But you know, you can pay for your own school several times with some of this money. It's just frustrating that the NCAA is so incompetent, in my opinion.
It is. We've been dealing with that for decades now. So I guess nothing really changes. You know, speaking of NIL, that clearly is going to factor into the decision of a guy like Trace Jackson Davis. And it really changes the equation for guys like that, you know, who are fringe NBA draft prospects, clearly could start making money immediately in either the G League or playing overseas. And I know, you know, right now playing overseas is very fraught and not as attractive of an option. But NIL is going to change the equation for a guy like that, who's going to be able to make hundreds of thousands of dollars if he comes back to Indiana. And Ryan, we saw, you know, he was invited to the NBA draft combine, which is obviously a great sign that, you know, at least a subset of NBA teams are interested in him as an NBA prospect. Because I think the way that works is the teams essentially vote on who they want there, and then guys who get enough votes are able to go. And so, you know, we'll see. You know, it's been said that if he's, you know, I think Jeff Rabjohn's reported, you know, that if Trace is in the top 35 or 40, he's going to stay in. And if he's not, he's probably going to come back. You know, you hear, you know, different things. Alex Bozich had Jeremy Wu from SI.com on his podcast. He's not as high on Trace as some other guys are. But as people have said, it just takes one or two teams, you know, who might have a vision for him, you know, think that his shot is workable. He's obviously got the NBA pedigree. He's got a good, you know, body, not necessarily the height that you need to play the way that he does, but he's got some things going for him. And so it's going to be interesting to see, what is your gut feeling? Like, if you had to handicap it right now, you know, what do you think of the odds that Trace is back in an Indiana uniform next year?
I'd go 51% to 49%. I think it's very close, because I think in his heart, Trace thinks he can play in the NBA, or at least play professionally and do very well. I've seen the clips in an open gym of him shooting threes and making them, and, you know, we'll see. But I think that it's a real toss-up for him. Because, quite frankly, other than winning a championship and winning like a Big Ten title or something like that, he doesn't really have much left to prove in college. He's put up numbers. He's led the team. He's all that. Now, he has stuff to prove on the court the way he plays, but he could prove that at the combine or, you know, in as a rookie or whatever. But at Indiana, I mean, he took the team from terrible to making the tournament, put him on his back and did that. He's going to be legend, like remembered for that forever. Had some incredible performances down the stretch. But, I mean, other than winning a Big Ten title, and maybe, I mean, if you want to say getting in the top four of the Big Ten is a huge deal to a player, no, championships are a big deal. Other than that, he doesn't have a whole lot left to prove. Maybe making an All-America team. I think that, you know, if he hasn't developed his game and needs more time to develop his game, he'll come back. If he thinks he's where he needs to be, he's going to go. And
yeah, oh, well, I agree with that. I mean, look, I think when he came to Indiana, it seemed, you know, that he was thinking 1 or 2 years and be in the NBA, and that hasn't happened. And again, NIL changes that. I would quibble a little bit on him, you know, not having more to accomplish at Indiana. I look at him a lot like I look at Yogi. Like, imagine if Yogi had left after his junior year. You know, Yogi would have been a good player, a good point guard in IU history, remembered well. Trace would kind of be on that level. And then think about what Yogi did his senior year. He elevated himself to legend status.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And Trace would have the opportunity to do that.
Yogi also won a championship.
And Trace would have the opportunity to do that. I mean, he'd be coming back to a team position to do that.
Well, I said other than winning a championship, you know, on the court statistically and what he's accomplished as an individual player, he doesn't have a whole lot left to prove. His numbers have been pretty consistent. Across the,
you know, right, he would basically be etching his name next to like Alan Henderson in terms of
not disagreeing
stats.
With that.
So yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, there's a lot for him to accomplish here still at Indiana. You know, I do think his
he
bias.
Left to, how about this? How about this? Not left to accomplish, left to prove. I'll say. I don't think he has a lot. He is who he is as a player, and he's done really well as a player, and he's gone past some career benchmarks as a player.
Okay, but. And coach, let me ask you, you know, because we see some of the clips of him, you know, shooting in those open gym situations, and you can't take too much from it except for this. Like, that seems like a shot that could work in a game. And the very few times we've seen him shoot it in a game, it's looked okay. And yet, you know, especially as it went through Big Ten season last year, he got to a point where he wasn't even looking at the basket, you know? And so that part of it, if he adds that to his game, he becomes a first team All-America type player, all Big Ten MVP type player, you know, and so that to me is something still to prove, you know, that he can be a multi-dimensional player instead of his legacy being, you know, Trace was a one-dimensional player on offense, got better on defense, you know, so, and those things obviously would help him then develop his game for the next level.
Yeah, I think where I agree with Ryan is I think his game has matured And I don't know, other than the jump shot, that you see much different. So a year of coming back to Indiana, is that really going to move him up into the first round, especially a year older? I don't know that he can improve his draft stock is where I would agree with Ryan.
Where I agree with you is,
to me, the most important thing to prove if someone's going to invest lots of money in you is that you have consistent competitive greatness. That there were moments where if things didn't go well in the beginning of the game, it took a long time for Trace Jackson Davis to get moving. And it took a coach just kind of ripping him in the Big Ten tournament after a half against Michigan for him to come out and be dominant, which then he showed he could do that the next few games and played at a high level. We all know he can play at a high level, but I think there were, and I'm not saying he doesn't have a good motor or anything, but the weight of maybe having to be that superstar kind of got to him at times. And there were, you know, there'd be a week or two, a week, three games in a row where he just wasn't productive, gotten some foul trouble. We always said play him, you know, you argued to play him with two fouls because it seemed if he sat too long, hard to get going. Well, the pros not only want the skills and all of those things, but they want someone who will show up. I know they do a lot of resting of players and all that over 82 games, but if you're going to pay for someone, you want someone to go in and play. You see it in the this tournament right now, the battling that is going on, and he needs to. That's the most important thing I think he has to prove to himself and prove to the next level, which playing at Indiana would be good. But I'm not sure I see his draft stock moving up with an All Big Ten, you know, or Player of the Year type stuff, because sometimes you just plateau as a basketball player. But the shot is the one thing that maybe could make the difference.
Yeah, I agree. No, I'm not sure. You know, if he can improve the shot, you know, then I think he could improve the NBA draft stock. I'm looking at it more, you know, in terms of reasons to come back. I mean, really going to that next level of legend at IU, you know, because he's already done some things that kind of put him, you know, in that category, you know, with, you know, players who have been around for 3 years and accumulate a lot of stats, he would have the chance to go to that next level to the extent, you know, that means something to him, you know, and it seems like it does. So we'll see. I'm probably at about 60% he comes back, just because it doesn't seem like he has the type of game that translates to the next level enough to be picked that high. But we'll see. Look, I hope he does. I think it would be great for Indiana if he's able to achieve his dream. He shows out at the combine. You know, it's one of those weird things. It's like I'm rooting for him to do as well as he can and get drafted. But the second that he comes back, which is essentially an admission that that didn't happen, I would be ecstatic to have him back, you know, in Bloomington. So it's kind of one of those weird things where you kind of like you're happy with either one. You know, I think he's earned the right to go pursue this and you know, I hope he gets, you know, I hope he gets good feedback, but we will see. If he comes back, get ready for Indiana to be on the short list of favorites in the Big Ten next season, and rightfully so, given the roster that they'll have, I think. Last thing, guys, before we hit mailbag, let's talk a little bit more about Jordan Hulls. I think we're all excited that he is back. Let me present the devil's advocate argument. I don't think there's a reasonable argument really for why he's not a home run hire, because if you can bring Jordan Hulls back, everything he means, you do it. I think even if you don't maybe have the requisite experience for the job, sometimes you bet on the person and you allow them to learn and grow into it. So to be clear, I am 100% on board with Jordan Hulls. Coach, what would you say to someone who says, wait, he was named recruiting coordinator, he has no recruiting experience, and given how important that is, why are we hiring a guy who's been playing basketball overseas for 8 or 9 years for a position where we need someone to hit the ground running and do some recruiting? You know, stepping in for pretty big shoes. We all know what Brian Walsh did, you know, in that position. What would you say to that devil's advocate argument that I don't actually believe, to be clear?
No offense to Brian Walsh, but did we know who Brian Walsh was and the job that he was doing? I mean, we kind of did because we're fans and we do a podcast, but the casual fans sitting in you know, in section F, row 32, could they even talk about, and again, I'm not trying to dismiss our fans, but a recruiting coordinator, you know what assistant coaches do, and you need a shot doctor and all that kind of stuff. But here's where I think it was a good hire. He's going to get inside doors and then phone calls. And he is Indiana basketball, playing in Bloomington in high school, being successful, being part of the last group that was a one seed, ranked number one, just a typical Hoosier, that's going to open a lot of avenues. And if he works as hard at this job as he did playing basketball, coming back, doing camps, working on his game as a professional, there's where you bet on that person. And so he'll come in and he'll be watching tape and he'll be able to pick out and talk to the coaches about what kind of players they want. I mean, these coaches all have their niche of where they go get players. Coach Yod's been doing a good job. Coach Yod's going to, you know, help him understand, here's the type of player I'm looking at. Here's a list of guys that I'm high on, you know, and then Jordan goes to work. And I've never met Jordan personally, but I can only imagine what, you know, if you're an Indiana fan or what he's going to sell the Indiana experience. I just think it was fantastic. It's always good to have that Indiana flavor. We saw the benefits of what's happened with that with Coach Woodson. You know, we all were wondering, do we need an IU guy? Do we not need an IU guy? You need the right IU guys in a program. Unfortunately, we've seen that with some changes recently, but it's nice to have that. And also promoting from within. I don't know the name of the person that was into the Dobo position too, but he was He was moved up within. And what that does is shows you come to work for Coach Woodson and you work hard, he's going to move you up. You move Brian Walsh. That's a – you get hungry people into the program as graduate managers, GAs, that not only Woodson's trying to win basketball games is number one thing, but he's going to help develop people. He's been in this game a long time in the NBA, and people take care of each other. We were just talking about it in the break, that it's about relationships and those kinds of things. And I think Coach Woodson's fantastic at that, and these hires show that. So short of a championship, this offseason's been off to a great start.
Ryan, what's on your shirt?
It's crap.
No. What's that word that's on your shirt that should never be worn during an assembly call podcast? Okay, east side. Okay, so now go down.
Yeah, but the
boiler factory.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry, Jared. I was wearing this today.
I don't accept that apology. That is totally inappropriate attire,
right?
For the
assembly break.
It's a food place, isn't it?
See, yes. Coach, that's why he wanted us to make him take his shirt off so he can show off his new physique here on the show.
I'm not
this
there
is
yet.
All buddy. Part of the plan.
It's not shaped part yet. Of the plan. Not shaped yet.
You know, Jared, I thought just him sending us pictures of that in our text group was bad enough. Now he wants to do it live on the show. We got to draw the line.
Ryan, your thoughts on the Jordan?
You know, I gave my thoughts on the Hall's hire in the opening segment. I think it's great. I don't see the drawback. I really don't. I don't think there are any negatives to it. I think he'll be great in that position. He knows Indiana high school basketball. He knows all the coaches you could possibly want to know in the state. He's, you know, going to be great. And let's be real, recruiting coordinator, or, you know, he's going to have multiple jobs. That's just the title they give you. A lot
it's
of these guys
team and recruiting coordinator. So yeah, I don't know exactly what else that means, but
well, and it just means that he's going to do a lot, you know,
keeping guys out of the portal.
Yeah, it's gonna be a behind the scenes job, probably, where he does a lot of things.
Doing curfew check,
because you know the assistant coaches are gonna handle a ton of the recruiting. So I think that it's probably just, you know, window dressing at this point. But I think he'll be fantastic at it. I think he'll be really good, and you know, it's great to have him back.
No, 100%. Okay. Good segment, fellas. Coming up here on Assembly Call Radio in our final segment, we got a lot of great questions from you folks, including a new mediocre question from Jay and several others. We will answer those when we come back. Stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Going to be some pretty good games of horse with Woody and Jordan Halls and Brian Walsh.
I'll take Halls.
These guys can shoot it a little bit.
Hang on. I'll change my shirt since it offends you so much. I honestly didn't even know that word was on there.
No, you don't actually have to change it. It's fine. But, I mean, okay. I guess he's going to. Okay. Well, there we go. All right. Good stuff here, Coach. Did you get a chance to look ahead at these questions?
A couple of them, yeah.
Okay. We don't all need to answer each of them. We can kind of go through, and there's a couple of them that'll be kind of fun to answer for all of us. Oh, and I wanted to, oh yeah, I know another question that I want to ask. Hey, there you go. The official hoodie of the Assembly Call. Much better.
I thought the official hoodie of the Assembly Call was the one that said Assembly Call on it.
No, that's the Bison. Dude, they pay us. Huh. It's the Bison. That's definitely the official hoodie. I mean, I guess they make the Assembly Call hoodie too, so either way, but we'll go with the Bison. All right, let's knock these questions out. Here we go.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of the Assembly Call.
Thank you again, Jordan. This is the Assembly Call, Assembly Call Radio. I am Jared Morris, here with Coach Brian Tonsoni and Ryan Phillips, talking about Indiana basketball. We forgot one headline. Indiana appears to have a team for the basketball tournament. We've been seeing some things kind of leak out. We are huge fans of the name of this team. Apparently, they're going to be called Assembly Ball. So we obviously endorse any play on words. Devontae Green was leaked tonight as the first player. I, for one, can't wait to watch some more Devontae Green heat check moments. Watch him hit, you know, 8, 9, 10 threes. Actually, it'd be really fun to watch him in an environment like that. So it's going to be fun to see who else is on that team. But yeah, I guess the question is, if the team is Assembly Ball, aren't we kind of obligated to do post-game shows after their games? Kind of have to, don't we?
I think we're at least obligated to have some people from it on the show.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Oh, yeah, we'll help promote them.
So, guys,
Indiana needs an alumni team. Yeah, we need an alumni team in the basketball tournament. So it's been too long since we've had one. If Tom Crean was willing to coach, since he is not working, would you? Okay. Coach starts shaking his head right off the bat. All right. Scratch that idea. All right. Let's get to some questions. All of these questions submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community. We've got people joining every single week, and you know, we really think you should. Things are obviously a little bit slower now just because it's not football season, it's not basketball season. We're all kind of taking a break, exhaling after what was a very emotional basketball season. But it's going to start ramping up, and we'd love to have you in there, assemblycall.com/community. You can also upgrade to get Tony Adranya's IU film room content, which is phenomenal. So check that out, assemblycall.com/community. And let's go to our first question.
It's not that good, but it's not that bad. It's Jay's mediocre question.
All right, gents, From Jay, given the current roster and the two 2023 commits, Gabe Cupps and Ja'Kai Newton, which current recruit would you be most excited about if they committed to IU? Ryan, I already know who you're going to say.
KJ Evans.
Well, I thought you were going to say Xavier Booker.
No.
I thought it was a disaster if he didn't come to Indiana. Has that changed?
Well, they got Malik Renaud, which I said took some of the sting off of that. I mean, obviously. I think that you need a big guy in that class. I think that Booker would be a great fit. I think his multi, you know, the fact that he's so multi-skilled is exactly what Mike Woodson's looking for. But KJ Evans is the best player they're recruiting. And you want to get the best player you're recruiting. And they actually have an in there with two of his teammates already on the team. So, but no, I have been saying that. I thought Booker was of tantamount importance. And then they got Malik Renaud. So I don't think Renaud replaces what you could have had in Booker, but I think it really lessens the impact of having that big guy in that class.
The thing about Renaud is he and Booker could really play well together.
Yes,
since Booker can face up, you know, he can be bigger and guard a taller guy, but he can step out. I think I would still go him. I have to admit,
Close.
Yeah. I have to admit, I'm very intrigued by Cohen Carr, who's a super athlete, who seems to really take pride on the defensive end. And he certainly seems like the kind of guy that if he gets any semblance of a jump shot, he could be like a 1 or 2 year college guy, but have a huge impact. Or, you know, he could struggle to adapt. Like, it feels like there's kind of a wide range of outcomes for him, but that kind of athletic talent, and it really seems like that's kind of what Mike Woodson is trying to build. He'd be intriguing too. So, I mean, I think those are the three guys that are probably the most intriguing. Coach, who's tops on your list?
You know me, I get excited once they sign, you know, but Booker looked really good in the state finals. It's my first chance seeing him play. And I'll just say him too, because he's getting a lot of offers now from around the country. And if you end up getting him to sign, you're starting to beat out some of the bigger schools. So not only do you get the player, that's pretty good. Well, and the other guy too, the Evans, it's going to be the same way there, but you're starting to play in the big boy pool again with both of those guys. So that to me is more exciting, is where the recruiting is going as a whole than individuals. But watching the Newton tapes coming out again, I know they're highlight tapes, but you know, I like that point guard that, you know, crosses people up, goes in, throws down a dunk, you know, in a half court offense. So I trust Coach Woodson. He's done a great job recruiting. He's going to land one of those two big guys. I think it's a must to fill out that roster, and that'll complement the guards and wings that he has. So I think we're headed in a good place regardless.
And they're also recruiting some other shooters, Stojakovic, Dunlap, a couple guys who can apparently fill it up. By the way, I just want to mention this comment that we just got here from Brian Whitaker. He said, "I always play your podcast. I'm a FedEx driver and haven't missed an episode. You make my workday better when I can listen and root." It says, "My thoughts and prayers to Andy and his family." Thank you for that, Brian. That makes us feel good, man. That's why we do this. That is why we do this. Well, that and so that we can rag on Ryan, because we need that. I've missed that for a couple weeks, man. Glad we were able to get back to that.
They're always so nice to me in our personal text chain, though, guys. It's really funny.
Ryan, we'd love to have you on the show tonight, man.
The lights come on, and it's just brutal. It's like getting hit with a pillowcase.
I might make that picture you sent my wallpaper on my phone. I'm so excited to see you again.
By the way, I didn't send any pictures, guys. Just so we're all clear, I don't send shirtless pictures to my coworkers.
Not on purpose.
National Labor Relations Board going to start an investigation.
Okay, so a couple of questions that we had in the community that really sparked some debate, and some people asked if I would ask you guys on the show. So here's one. Elbows In wanted us to do this one. So the question was, if you could snap your fingers and guarantee that one of these player skills would take a major leap this season, which one would you pick and why? Okay, and the five options are Trey Galloway's three-point shooting, Xavier Johnson's decision-making, Trace Jackson Davis's mid-range shooting, Tamar Bates' perimeter defense, or Jordan Geronimo's ball handling and awareness. And if you have an other, like if you think that there's one more prominent than those, obviously name it. Those were kind of the five that jumped out to me as the biggest swing skills of the returning guys for next season. Which one would you, if you could just guarantee it and say this is going to happen, which one would you pick? Coach, you first.
To me, it's down to Bates and Geronimo, because I think those two guys can impact with their growth the most. They're all good, and we wish all of them would happen. But if Tamar can play the level of defense that Coach Woodson wants, then I think he gets more run, and then his offense can take off. And I think he brings a scorer's mentality. I don't know if he's a fantastic shooter yet, but I think he's capable, and I think he needs to play a lot of minutes. It'll help us the most. So that would be my number one. Obviously, Geronimo using his athleticism, that would be number two. The others are important as well, but if Tamar can guard to the level that's needed, I think that just increases the offense, which was the weak spot of Indiana this year.
Ryan?
Trey Galloway shot, 100%. And the reason why is because you saw the difference with how the offense moved and the team played with Trey Galloway on the floor. It gets bogged down when people don't guard him on the perimeter because they know he cannot shoot. So I don't think it's going to happen. I'm on record saying I don't think he's ever going to have a great shot. Just the fact that he didn't change his motion between his freshman and sophomore year, really, I just don't think it's going to happen. If that's the case and it doesn't happen, I actually agree with probably Tamar's perimeter defense. I think he also needs to work on his offensive game a little bit, but I think the perimeter defense is certainly anything with Tamar, because he's got to be a complete player for Indiana. I think that he's the high upside guy. You know, I think he has more upside than even the two guys who are coming in next year for Indiana. I just do. I think he can be a guy that takes over games offensively. So that's what my answer is Galloway's 3-point shooting. But if I had to go with a second, it would be Tamar.
Yeah, for the record, the community, 52% of respondents said Trey Galloway's 3-point shooting, Jordan Geronimo's ball handling and awareness were next, and then Trace's mid-range shooting after that. Interesting to think about. The other question we had that really split the community is, of the four incoming recruits who we talked about earlier, Jalen Hutchefino, Malik Renaud, Caleb Banks, and CJ Gunn, if you had to bet $1,000 on which one of them will score the most points, the most career points in an Indiana uniform, which one would you bet on?
Oof.
It's a tough one.
It is tough. I know what the community probably said. I haven't seen it, but I know what the community probably said. I think they're going to say CJ Gunn because he's going to be a four-year player.
He was leading for a while. I'd have to look to see the updated numbers.
But Caleb Banks, because I think he's going to play 4 years, and I think he's going to be like a Christian Watford kind of guy who sneakily outscores everybody. That would be my guess.
Interesting. All right, let me see.
I was going to go the same way.
I think he'll ever lead the team in scoring.
Yeah, Renault's the best scorer, and depending on how many years he stays, you could go with Renaud, and I think Renaud and Gunn are right there, depending on how soon Gunn gets some run and gets into the rotation.
I think Gunn's not going to play much.
Banks, he doesn't get talked about enough, I think, and we'll see. But, yeah, I agree with Ryan on that one.
Yeah, the community chose Gunn at 34%, and then it was Jalen Hutchefino, then Malik Renaud, and then Caleb Banks. That's the thing with Gunn, man. If he plays, he's going to score because that's what he does.
He doesn't play as a freshman, so I think it takes one season. You know, he'll play, but I don't think he'll play much. So that takes 1 year off his potential.
Yeah.
We're arguing some. If you're saying who's the best scorer out of those guys, it's probably Malik Renaud. But
who will score the most career points? That's what makes it interesting.
I'm going with Banks because I think he sticks around, and I think that he'll play this year and score. Not a ton, but he's going to have a jump start when Gunn gets started, is my pick. And my thing is, I think Renaud is probably 3 years. So, yeah. That's a guess.
Of course it's a guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a tough one to
like
answer.
You know, I'm saying there's not like a scientific way to really break
yeah,
this
it really,
down.
Yeah, I think really it comes down to a few things. You know, what do you think the pro potential is of Hutchefino, Malik Renaud, and Caleb Banks? How soon do you think that they might leave? And then how soon do you think Gunn is going to play? You know, because his three-point shot on a team that still needs three-point shooters, there's a path to him playing this year.
He could absolutely play this
year. You know, that's the thing. And if he does, and if he becomes that guy that you're relying on as your shooter, and he hits that upside, like I said, you know, earlier tonight, his upside is maybe a Corey Kispert type guy. Well, he's going to score a lot of points, but, you know, we'll have to see. So It's fun, though, to have four guys that multi-talented that you feel pretty good about. That's really the point of the discussion. Okay, let's hit some of these quickly, Ryan. I know you've got to go, so let me find a good question for you. All right, from Steven, which non-IU Big Ten player that's still on the fence about the draft are you most hoping will stay in the draft? Possible candidates seem like Malachi Branham, Max Christie, Musa Diabate, Chris Murray, Caleb Houston, Bryce McGowan, Pete Nance. He's assuming that Johnny Davis, Keegan Murray, EJ Liddell, Jaden Ivey, Kofi Coburn, Ron Harper Jr., and Travion Williams are locks to leave college. Who do you think? Of all those guys, who would you most like to see stay in the draft so that Indiana does not have to face them? Branham's not coming back, I don't think. I'm pretty sure he's going.
Coach or me?
Either one. Whoever has a strong opinion.
Chris Murray.
Ready for the Murray brothers to be gone?
Yes. I think there's upside there given, you know, what his brother did.
Chris is the one who killed us in the first game. And then Keegan killed us in the second game.
Yeah, because Keegan, especially seeing Keegan's development, I would say Chris. I think. Yeah.
Coach is gonna pick Murray just to spite Fran McCaffrey. Not even for any other reason.
Fran, they won't
win. Who's the highest upside of that group? Who's the highest? Probably
Branham or Christie.
Right? Oh, maybe Houston. Too, yeah. And they all are good.
I would say one of the Michigan guys, just to help Michigan slide back a little bit. You know, Houston or was it Diabate or whatever.
Pete Nance can stay as long as he wants.
Yeah.
Ouch. Miller Kopp.
No, I just mean he doesn't scare you when you play, you know, like.
I think Chris Murray, he passed on the NBA combine, so he may actually be coming back anyway.
He's coming back.
So,
yeah, sorry, you're not going if you pass on the combine.
All right.
And yeah, I would say Max Christie or Caleb Houston if Chris Murray isn't an option.
And then the other thing that we got here, here's a question from Valerie. So we'll get you out of here on this, Ryan. And then, Coach, we can roll through the rest of these. Valerie wants to get your thoughts on this quote from Jay Billis. Did you see the quote from Jay Billis on the Rich Eisen show, your boy?
Yeah, if you want to read it for the listeners.
I will.
But I did see it.
So Billis said, I get it. Like, if I didn't have to pay my employees, I'd be pretty happy with things. But sadly, you actually have to pay your employees, and that's the way the world works. When coaches say this isn't supposed to be what this is about, this is supposed to be about education and mentoring young people and making them into better adults and all that stuff. Okay, if you think this is what it's about, the doors to Division II and Division III are wide open. Coach, here's the quote you're talking about.
Yeah.
And coaching in high school, wide open. There's nothing that's stopping anyone from doing that if that's what you think it's really about.
So let me first take aim at the education angle. Because, yes, an education is very important, and these guys do get a free education. Everyone talks about, well, that's their compensation. No, because a lot of these kids who don't know what they want to do, who have only played basketball and essentially cruised by in high school because of their basketball playing abilities, and let's not kid ourselves. That happens all over this country. And these kids come to school, they don't know what they want to do, and essentially a program assigns them a major that is the easiest one for them to get through to get a college degree. They don't say, well, what do you want to do in your future? What do you want to be in a business? Do you want to be in communications? They assign them a pretty easy major to cruise through. Okay. And a lot of these kids are getting so much help from, you know, tutors and whatever. And that's great. I'm glad they're getting it. But at the same time, they don't go to college the way you or I go to college. Okay. It's a different experience. It's not. They're there to play basketball. They're there to play football. Some kids take serious advantage of it and understand it and have the foundation to know and be pushed to do that and go to the Kelly School and graduate and know that's what they want to do, knowing their future may not be in basketball. A lot of kids across the NCAA don't do that because they are not told how to do that the best, in the best way. And so this idea, not every school cares about the education of its players like Indiana has in recent years, and really turned that around and made a key point to make sure that these guys are on campus and they have the opportunity to even get their master's degree if they stay 4 to 5 years. Not every school does that. A lot of schools just want these guys to play their sport with as little interaction, with as little problems in school as possible, as few problems in school as possible. When was the last time you heard about a player being suspended for academics in college sports? They have figured out a system and a way to present it where these guys can pass everything without really putting in the effort that a normal student will put in to pass a class. Why? Because they've got this other thing that's basically a full-time job. And so I'm the education angle of that's their compensation. Well, they don't go to school the way we do. Yes, they get a piece of paper at the end that says they went to college, but a lot of them graduate and are not prepared for the world out there. They have been prepared solely to play basketball or football or whatever. And so Jay Billis is absolutely right. Now, you want to compare them to employees. I know that's murky because the schools don't pay them directly, like whatever. But quite frankly, this is the world we're in now. And these kids have earned through their play, through their hard work and everything, have earned the right to make money off of themselves. They're not making money off the school. They're not making money off it. The schools that are complaining about this want to make money off of those players' names and likenesses. And I'm sorry, the university does not own that. Just like an NBA team does not own their players, those guys can go make their own sponsorship deals. It's the same thing. And the coaches who are high and mighty about it, like guys like Dabo Swinney, who said that if players can make money, he was retiring. He didn't retire. He's still making $10 million a year, and he's just fine with it. Like, they don't, anybody who is complaining about this, I get the complaints about there need to be some guardrails here, but anybody complaining that it exists is a hypocritical a-hole. Like, I'm sorry. You'll make all the money you want off the backs of these kids, but the second they start to get a little bit of money, you're furious about it. That is wrong. It is completely wrong. A free market has allowed you to make as much money as you can to coach a game. That same free market dictates what those players can make off their likeness. They have worked hard for it, and they absolutely deserve it. And if there is a market out there to pay them while they are on college campuses, they should be able to take advantage of it.
Okay. Well said. That's like a mic drop.
I'm in the mood to argue.
No, there's no argument there. You're right on everything. That's a mic drop moment right there for you.
There's a couple things that Ryan brings up too, is like some of these coaches are upset that they've lost a little leverage. A Clemson coach or someone else had all the leverage of either recruiting because they're the national championship or because their bag droppers were better when it was under the table. And now you have schools
that's the thing.
Get a collective. And so these people are all complaining about, oh, this is horrible now. Well, you were the benefit in some of these schools of that under the table stuff too. And the fact is,
the SEC in football and basketball was not paying kids the same amount they're making with NIL. They absolutely were. They were just doing it, as you coach said, under the table with bags of cash and McDonald's bags. We know that story. Like, it was already happening. Now everybody can take advantage of it. That's the only difference, and it's not being done in the shadows.
And the other thing is that the money has exploded over the years that the schools make, the coaches make, and the only ones who didn't. And if you did want to say that the $80,000 or $100,000 education is compensation, that is not a fair price for the amount of time they have to put in, the travel, all of those things. And you know, the revenue sports especially, but you also have the non-revenue sports. These kids put a lot into it, that the ability to do things a little bit differently really benefits the athletes. You know, you have a sport like baseball with 11.7 scholarships. Some of that NIL money is going to help pay the rest of their tuition to play a college sport if they can at a big baseball school like an SEC school too. Absolutely right. It's a different game. We can sit here and especially us older people knew how it was back in the day, but there was money being exchanged back in the day. We just didn't hear about it. And then the NCAA would rarely, do anything about it again. So, I agree with Dave Billis.
Unless you were a team or athletic program that was upsetting the balance, they would never go after you. They went after schools like Miami. They went after schools like USC. They went after schools that were doing something different than had always been done. And they picked where they went after people. North Carolina basketball didn't get hit hard despite making up classes. That's what they go after. And so now that it's out in the open, everybody can do it openly. Now, again, totally saying there need to be guardrails in place. I completely agree. There need to be guidelines for what's legal, what's not legal, what can be done, whatever. But anybody complaining that kids are now getting paid and it's not the same game, oh, shut up. Cheers.
Cheers. Good note to end on, Ryan.
I got to get out of here, guys.
Go talk about
seeing everybody.
Go write about the Sixers.
I will. What a collapse, man.
Yeah.
Later, guys.
All right. See you, man. Coach, let's hit these final questions from JD. Ceiling and floor for next year's team with and without Trace, assuming no one else leaves and we don't add anybody else. What do you think?
I think the ceiling is top two or three in the Big Ten and a top five seed. I think that's within grasp. Things are going to have to go well, and team, you know, the roster is going to have to gel, and you're going to have to win a game against Arizona or something like that early, and then win more games than you did against upper echelon Big Ten teams. That's the major concern from the basketball standpoint. Is seven of our nine wins were against teams that played in the first day of the tournament. That
Big
has
Ten
to
tournament.
Be better of the Big Ten tournament. Yes. So, but that's the ceiling, and to get there in 2 years is just impressive. Part of that is some other schools kind of falling down. And I think if TJD's not there, I think you get a top sixth, you know, and you're sitting there in a 6, 7, 8 seed type of thing, because we still have some of the same issues with some of the same guys that have coming back and a new class of freshmen who have to learn college basketball. I am very careful and cautious not to jump to the top five, top 10 kind of discussion, because it was such a good year. It was close to being a little bit disastrous if we don't make a comeback against Michigan. The whole tone of all of this is quite different. So we all got to keep that in mind. But I think you can be a top two or three team with TJD. And to be honest with you, there's a chance to be that without him. Because I just believe in what's happening here and the adjustments the coaches will make from their errors in year one. But, you know, I just think we're back into discussion now of being a year-to-year contender. And the Big Ten, even in a down year, if it's down next year, Jared, is competitive. And finishing, you know, 4, 5, or 6 in some years gets you a pretty good seed as well. So I'm excited about it, because I think the tournament – is, you know, the absolute bottom of where we would be regardless.
And then Philip had this question, which he directed specifically to you. Has coach seen CJ Gunn play? Does he believe he will be in the rotation? I've heard he's a good shooter with elevation and can pull up on a dime. Great at getting his shot off.
I have not seen him play live. I've just seen tapes and games on television, and he does have some ability. I like his jumper. And I just like his ability to score. I don't know that he'll make the rotation right away this year, because as you see a lot of kids like a Tamar Bates, the move to college is a huge learning curve. And I think your 3 stars and your 4 stars have to find a niche. Will there be a game or two where he comes in, plays 10 or 12 minutes, pops for 14 points, wins a game for IU? Yes, I believe that to be happened. Will happen. To be a consistent rotation player, I don't know that I see that with the hope of Tamar improving his game, Geronimo improving his game, Galloway, and the guys that we have back from the rotation last year. I think he's going to be in a supportive role. And if he does get more run, Jared, it'll be, you know, in the second half when you see, you know, we always go back to Juwan Morgan and OG that year where they just kind of were feeling things out, got a little more play at the back end and contributed. And then the next year, their sophomore year, they were ready to really contribute at a higher level. That's where I see CJ Gunn. But he's good to have, because, you know, if you do need a burst, you're down 6 or 7 or 8 and, you know, he can go in for a few minutes and get you some points. I do see a role, but I think it'll be a minimal marginal role, and specifically game planning in his freshman year.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with him, you know, his niche would be the shot. You know, if
right.
he can come in on a team that doesn't have a lot of proven 3-point shooting and be a 3-point shooter, he may be able to find minutes. The question is, it's a big adjustment for shooters. And a lot of guys take a year, you know, even good shooters can take a year to acclimate. And plus, defensively, we know Coach Woodson
right.
is going to play the guys who play defense. So it is going to be an uphill battle. But if he can, if those two things, if he, you know, is able to develop quickly, he'll have a path because, you know, he may be one of the best 3-point shooters on the team as soon as he steps, you know, on campus. But how will that translate to the games? That's what we'll have to see. But I think I really think he's an interesting long-term prospect for Indiana because, you know, everything that Philip described about him is true. I mean, he's got good elevation on his shot. You know, he's a pretty good athlete. He seems like a tough kid. He played in a winning program. So there's a lot to like about him. It may just take a year or two for it to fully materialize, right, which is, you know, for a guy ranked where he's ranked, that's what you would typically expect. That's the normal. Yep. You know, think about Armon Franklin, who really struggled as a shooter his first year, you know, and then his second year really got comfortable and the shooting came around. You know, maybe something similar for a guy like CJ Gunn. Last question, Coach, from Jeff. If the season started tomorrow with the current roster, who is the five you want on the floor at crunch time? If TJD doesn't return, who would it be? A lot of unknowns here because we haven't seen some of the guys play, but just based on what you know, who would be your crunch time five?
Boy, that's hard, but I'm going to go. Obviously, Race has to be a part of that. The way X played down the stretch, he's got to be a part of that. I'm going to go the two Mount Verd players because they're part of a championship program. I think they can do some things if they get to a level where they can compete. I want Hood Schifino out there for a second ball handler and a defender, and Renault can do some things. Geronimo might be in there at some point, and then it's going to come down to who you're going to play at the three and what you need. If you're behind, you might, you know, want a shooter at that three. So is it Geronimo, Cop? Probably not Galloway if you need shooters. Tomorrow. If you need some toughness, you maybe put, you know, a Galloway in there because I think he's a winner. But yeah, I think it's, for me, it's easy. There are at least, without TJD, there are four guys right now. And really the two freshmen, I'll have to see him play. That could change, you know, early. Tamar could be in there. Cop could be in there as well. So I know I didn't go through a whole five, but I gave you, you know, pick who you want to fill in for there. And again, maybe it's my crimson colored glasses. Those two kids from Mount Verd know how to play, and I think they know how to win. And I think at some point they're going to be those players that are in key moments. You know, it changes if TJD's there.
You know, the thing, I really like our team for next year. I love kind of mixing and matching the pieces because there's so much talent. But the one thing, and I could kind of see it going through your head as you're putting those lineups together, the one thing that's going to be a struggle again next year is finding lineups with enough shooting. Because, you know, X, obviously a guy who was pretty good as a catch and shoot guy last year, and he may get more of those opportunities, you know, if he's able to play off ball more with Jalen Hood-Schifino. I agree. I think Jalen Hood-Schifino is going to start from day one, and I think he's going to play a lot of minutes. You know, I think he's going to be more along the lines of a Yogi Romeo type freshman than a Christian Lander, you know, type freshman. But he's not known as a shooter coming out of high school. And again, guys a lot of times struggle with shooting. So that right there, at best, you probably have subpar 3-point shooting. Okay, at best, you have decent 3-point shooting. More than likely, you have subpar 3-point shooting from your one and your two. So that means you have to get it from your three, right? And so is that going to be Tamar? You really hope so. Like I almost think Tamar's 3-point shooting should have been in that swing skill question because you really need him to be a guy
who can
threaten you, yeah, as a shooter. You know, because you're right. Like, you know, Mike Woodson likes to have Trey Galloway out there for the defense. But if you have X and Trey and Jalen Hood-Schifino playing together, you got no, you know, proven perimeter shooting that really scares anybody. And you're not getting it from your big guys, you know, whether it's Race or Trace or Malik Renault, you know, unless you're able to play Miller Kopp or Jordan Geronimo at the four, you know, and their 3-point shooting comes around. So, you know, I think we need to prepare ourselves for two things. You know, a team that is going to enter the season probably in the top 25, especially if Trace comes back, top two or three in the Big Ten, and a whole lot of potential. They'll be good defensively. They're going to be athletic. They're going to have a lot more ways to score this year. We're not going to be a good 3-point shooting team again. And it's going to be frustrating all season long unless guys who are already on the roster really take big steps forward. And that's the thing that I think is hard for Indiana fans to see, because we haven't seen that development in shooting. Like we saw in the Crean years, where you saw Christian Watford get better every year, Hulls get better as a shooter, Oladipo get better. We haven't seen that. But man, that, you know, that's going to be the difference between this being a top 25 level team and possibly a Big Ten championship top 10 team. They've got the physical ability to do it, the size, the athleticism, all that stuff. Will they be able to make open shots? And you can kind of feel it when you start putting these lineups together. It's like, man, I like all these guys. These are fun parts and pieces. That lineup's going to be fun. It's just going to be clanking a lot of shots, you know, unless guys develop. So
no, they have to develop, because I think Indiana got open shots last year. If we go back and do a show on that, they you know, they got some open shots, but our shooters were easy to guard last year. Yeah. To know where they were going to be when that started changing, the offense got a little better. But I also think your shooters need to be multiple dimensioned guys as well. So it makes a closeout difficult. If you know you're a dead three, you're going to fly at someone and fly by someone to get them off, run them off the 3-point line. And that causes some misses when it isn't, you know, you're open, but you know, guys have been flying by all year. Or that if you could also shot fake and drive off of that, now you got defense on your scouting report. Like, okay, this guy can shoot a three, but he also can drive. We want to take away the drive. Well, then that shortens up the closeout, maybe gives you more open shots. I'm hoping that's the case with Indiana, that you have guys who are capable of shooting, another year of confidence, continuing to get open shots. But when, you know, you have someone who can't shoot, Galloway, you could play for the drive. When you have Parker, Stewart, and Miller Kopp, you can lock them down close and close out hard on them. If you do help off of them, you can close out hard, because you actually want them to drive. But when you get the more athletic people out there doing that, now you're going to be in rotation on defense, and that ball can pop, and that one more passing. And so maybe better open shots lead to better three-point shooting. But until we see it, that's going to be a pitfall probably for this team, until we know for sure that when that ball's open, when the shot's open, it's going to go in more times than not. And we just don't have that quite yet. We haven't seen it. It has to develop if it's going to be there.
If Tamar and Trey Galloway can be credible three-point shooters, this is a top 10 team. I firmly believe that. It's a big if.
I can't go there yet.
I would. I think that's what they're missing. Like that guy who can drive and shoot. If those guys are credible.
Right.
That's what
I mean. I was just saying.
If those guys are credible. Yeah. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying if that happens, that's how good that's how good I think this team can be. But we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be a fun team. I can't wait for the season. Definitely going to be a fun team.
It's a ways away. I need my summer vacation. Don't take my summer away from me.
I know. All right. That is going to do it for us on this week's edition of the Assembly Call. Great to be back. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thank you to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of Riggs Design for designing our logos. Thank you for listening. We will be back next Thursday night, back to our regular schedule, to talk IU hoops with you again. Until then.
Take it from me, Jordan Halls. Keep your elbow in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
All right. Good to be back with you, Coach.
Good to be back.
That was fun. That was good fun. Time to go see if the Mavericks can stay alive. They're winning.
Yeah, I have it on, but I don't know the score. It was within 3 or 4 at one point.
They're up 9. I mean, they're going to go lose in Phoenix if they win this one. But
what is it, 3-2 Phoenix?
Yeah. The home team has won, pretty much controlled every game. So, all right. Well, thanks for being
here,
everybody.
How's the USFL going for?
Man, it's going all right, but my dad's team, they're 1-3. They've lost like all these close games. It's, you know, those leagues, it's about the quarterback. I mean, all football is about the quarterback, but it's really about the quarterback in leagues like that. And they just don't have a quarterback that makes plays, unfortunately. So they'll get up at halftime, but then they always lose late in the game because the other team's quarterback is just better. So that kind of stinks. kind of stinks. And he had like the, you know, he was part of the best teams in the AAF and the XFL, but both those leagues ended before they actually got to do the playoffs and the championship. So now this team is struggling.
Is he enjoying it?
Well, he loves it. They're in Birmingham. So he's just like in Birmingham for like 3 months. They don't even come home. Uh-huh. But yeah, he's a football guy. So as long as he's right. doing football, he's happy. You know, I'm sure he's not enjoying the losing quite so much, but he loves being around.
No,
football.
But you're right. There is something about when you're in it. And
yep. In it, part of the team, get the competition, you know, of game day. So that's, yep. that's what he's all about.
So, all right.
All right.
Thanks, Chat Mob, everyone listening. Appreciate it.
Good to see you guys, Coach. We will see you next Thursday.
Sounds good, my friend. Have cool. a good week.
See you, everybody.